Hey everyone, just a reminder that if you're looking for all the early episodes, that's 2012, the beginning of the show, through 2018, all those episodes 1 through 147, they're all exclusively available on Patreon, patreon.com/IHTpod. $5 a month gets you access to the old library every episode. I encourage you to help support the show by joining Patreon. You can also, kick in more money a month. That helps me get to Nashville, Los Angeles, New York, etc. And do these in-person interviews. If you're a fan of that, and some people don't care about the whole Zoom thing, and that's cool. That's cool. We get it. It's the way things go, but I like the in-person vibe, and I think a lot of you do as well. So help out, support the show, join Patreon, kick in money, and I'll keep the show going, man. I'll keep it going weekly, and if not more, I can get 2 to 3 episodes out a week if we can get this going. And new merch up on the site, IHTpod.com. Pint glass. Enjoy a beer. And a new I'd Hit That pint glass. Get your coffee mugs, get your t-shirts, get your hoodies. The cold weather's coming. Again, patreon.com/IHTpod. Kick in and help. Enjoy the episode. All right, man. I think we're going to be okay. Like so.
Beautiful.
And numbers are running there. I got my glasses on. I can see that. All right. Looking good. I like to see that. Okay. You ready, brother?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk drums.
I'm in Nashville with Evan Hutchings.
Yes.
Evan, thank you for having me over. We are at Drum Paradise.
Drum Paradise,
in
yeah.
Nashville.
Run a lot of drums in here. A
lot of drums in here. Owned and operated by Harry...
McCarthy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And great guy. Got Harry came in, said hello.
Great dude.
Great dude.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Shines through. I mean, legend.
Yeah, I mean, if people could see what... I mean, it's stacked floor to ceiling. I think it's a 60,000 square foot warehouse, floor to ceiling, full of drums.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's insane. I didn't even realize there'd be this many, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's kind of a shock, you know?
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, I mean, they're incredible. So they take all my drums from here to different studios and set me up, you know, based on whatever sessions I'm doing for that week. Set me up exactly the same every time, got everything right, got it all... taped down on my rug and got the whole vibe set up, and they're awesome. They're yeah. amazing. They make it go for sure.
Yeah. And
big shout out, Drum Paradise.
You ain't kidding, man. This episode brought to you by. Now, by the way, are you doing? What's the deal? Like, what is the state of the union? Because I mean, you are in the studios a lot. You're also doing it from the home studio. I take it.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah. The majority of what I do, I would say, is at other studios around town, Music Row, Berry Hill, you know, around town, Nashville, Franklin, Brentwood. I mean, it's almost every day kind of thing for me where I'm at right now. So there's still a lot of session work to be had. I mean, don't move here, but, you know.
Right.
But no, it's great. And Nashville is one of the last cities, it seems like, to where there's full band tracking sessions every day. Every day there's multiple studios booked. It's not as busy as what it used to be, like what we were talking about, you know, back in the 90s, early 2000s. But you can still have a great career as a session musician here, which is awesome. I love it. Super thankful. So, yeah, that's what I do. And I have a studio also at my house where I track for people. People send me files and we'll Zoom, you know, or I'll send a plug, like an audio movers link, and they can stream the audio from my Pro Tools rig, which is cool, and keeps me busy.
Yeah,
thankful.
Man.
Where are you from, by the way?
I'm from Arkansas, from Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Yeah, right on.
I don't really have a southern accent, I guess, because my dad's from Minnesota, so he kind of evened me out on the accent, you know.
Okay,
mom's from Arkansas, dad's from Minnesota, so I kind of got the... I can put it on, though, pretty quick if I...
Levon Helm birthday?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah.
Levon, okay. Johnny Cash.
There's
a couple.
We'll go with Levon for...
Let's go with Levon.
For this. I mean, Johnny Cash is great. We love Johnny Cash.
I doubt he played drums. Yeah.
Exactly. But, wait, so when did you get here?
So I moved to Nashville in 2006 with a band that I was in high school. We were touring around the country, just doing, booking our own shows, touring, you know, trailer strapped to the back of my Ford Explorer and doing that whole thing. So moved to Nashville together, went to school here. I went to Middle Tennessee State University, studied drums there, and we played, me and my band, we were called The Exception. We played one show here, and I realized this band is not gonna go anywhere. We're not that... Well, we weren't as good as I thought, as we thought we were.
So you played everywhere else. You were doing touring around from Arkansas. And then you're like, we're good, we're cool, we're good. Got to Nashville.
Had our own merch, doing the whole deal.
And playing a show here made you realize.
Yeah, and I kind of always wanted to be a studio musician anyways, but I just didn't really know what that looked like. You know, there wasn't really... This is like pre-YouTube,
Well,
who
were your
Instagram
guys then for that...
So it would be like Matt Chamberlain, Jim Keltner, those were the guys that I look up to. I remember like every once in a while Chamberlain would have a website and then he would like take it down and then put it back up. And I'm like, okay, what kits is he, what is he using? What is he buying? So I would just go on there and like try to save up and like buy any, whatever he was using in the studio. Yeah. And so I know we're kind of bouncing around here, but like, So we played one show, and some of the bands that we were playing with were so good. Everybody was just so good. And I go, okay, I'm gonna hop out, do my own thing, and just try to play with as many artists as I can and see if it works out. And so far, so good, you know?
It's been interesting.
Yeah.
So that was 2006, got here with the band.
Yeah,
and then
CSU.
But was the plan to move here when you did that, or...?
It was, yeah.
Okay,
so
okay. The whole band was going to relocate.
We all moved here, yeah.
Did you live together?
We did, yeah. We had a house over on 8th Avenue, 8th and Wedgewood.
So did that stay?
No, I moved out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I moved. So I was going to school at MTSU, which is in a small town just outside of Nashville, maybe 30 minutes outside of Nashville. So I just moved there and lived in a practice room, basically. Just practiced every day, all day. That's all I did for a couple years. And then I started touring with an artist named Griffin House right around 2009. So left school, went on the road, did that whole thing.
Yeah.
And just didn't look back. Started doing session work. But the thing that really, to kind of rewind, I guess, a little bit, when you're talking about who are your guys, Steve Jordan, my dad gave me a VHS of James Taylor Live at the Beacon Theater. I think it was in 98, and Carlos Vega had just passed away, which I didn't know all this stuff. I later found out from Luis Conte meeting him in a restroom at SIR here in Nashville, oddly enough. And we're just sitting there, me and him, like talking about that VHS, you know?
Yeah.
And, but anyway, my dad, we were big James Taylor fans, and he gave me that VHS, and I didn't know who Steve Jordan was. I didn't know who any of the guys were at the time, and it just... I was like, I want to be that guy. That's what I want to do, you know? Yeah. Changing out snares for every song. I'd never seen anybody do that.
Right.
It was so cool. And he looked so cool playing traditional grip. Yeah. So I started practicing traditional grip. Yeah. I wasn't a drumline guy at all, you know?
Right.
Played sports growing up.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was like, okay, that's the North Star for me. I want to do that.
Right. Okay, so it just got you.
It got me good.
And how long was the whole schooling thing?
2 years, maybe 2.5 years.
And you're just full on doing that in the practice room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Just throwing yourself into this. And what was the plan with that? Like, what were you going to do with the degree? Or
the goal was honestly to not graduate and to like start working.
Okay.
But the school thing for me was just sort of a it was just a means to an end in a way. It was just to get here. That kind of just got me here, and I thought, you know, there wasn't really a plan, honestly. It wasn't like I had written out, this is what I want to do. It was just more following my gut and meeting people and just being interested in studio stuff. Had a really good friend, mentor, Will Sales, his name is a great drummer, lives here in town. And I met him when I was in high school at a show. He was playing with an artist in Arkansas touring. And I did the whole, like, went up on stage after the show and, you know, awkwardly introduced myself and exchanged info, and we kept in touch. And
yeah.
And then he would let me tag along with him on sessions here because he was doing a lot of session work. And so that's how I learned how to tune your drums for the studio and how to read a chart or how to, like, just play for the studio rather than live, because it was so different, which I didn't know, you know. It was... So I learned a lot from him, for sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. And by the way, who were the guys in town at that point? When you, as you recall.
So that would, like, the guys that were working a lot.
Yeah.
So that would have been, like, and still are, you know, Chad Cromwell, Shannon Forrest, Chris McHugh, Greg Morrow, Eddie Bayers, Lonnie Wilson. Those guys. I think Fred Eltringham had just moved here and Near Z had just moved to town then, but I didn't really know them then. So yeah, those were the guys where, you know, you're thinking like, well, shit, it's going to take till one of those guys kicks the bucket till I'm going to be able to get in here and do some work.
Right.
But everybody was cool. Once I started meeting some guys, and it was a different scene. I came up with my own peers, our own scene. We were doing different stuff, and that's what I tell guys all the time. Like, you rarely are gonna get gigs from other drummers. It seems like you're gonna get gigs from bass players or guitar players or keyboard players. So it was like, those were the guys I was hanging with and working with, and we were doing demo sessions early on, just hacking away triples, you know, like working a lot and just churning out demos. And that's how I learned how to do sessions, really.
Yeah.
And it was with this whole crew of guys that came up together, like me and guitar player Derek Wells and Chris Donegan and, you know, David LaBriere and Dale. I played with John Mayer. Guys like that, we were working together. David Dorn, Dave Cohen, keyboard players. There was probably a period of 5 years there where I saw those guys almost every day. Right. And now we're playing on records together and doing other things and stuff. So
yeah.
That's really, it seems like, how I wasn't trying to be one of those guys at that time. I was just trying to do my own thing and figure out what I could bring differently to the table.
Right. No, that's cool. I mean, I think it's interesting you say that, because we were talking before we started rolling tape about the guys that are, well, I don't want to say phasing out, but, you know, because a lot of most are still working.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those guys you mentioned. Yeah. Most of them. All. Actually,
they're just the generation above where I am.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I think that's a good way to say it. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That the generation.
Or two.
Or two, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because I don't think Fred Eltringham is in the same generation.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is what it is, man. Like, that's the new guys, as Harry said, come on the field, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's a different thing. Were you a fan of country music when you got here?
Not really, honestly, which I feel guilty saying that.
Seems like that's common.
I play on 99% of the stuff that I work on is country music. So I grew up, my dad's a pastor of a church in Arkansas, so I grew up at church all the time. My parents wouldn't let me listen to non-Christian music, you know, so I had to hide that. I had to hide those records.
Okay. Interesting.
So I grew up, but, you know, oddly enough, like Chris McHugh, Chad Cromwell, Greg Morrow, Shannon, a lot of those guys played on these records that I grew up listening to, like, all the time, you know. And so I grew up listening to those guys, not knowing really who they were, but it was ingrained in my head. You know, a lot of guys would play on Christian music and country music back then, and still do to a certain extent today, but it was definitely more prevalent then. So yeah, I grew up on Christian music, contemporary Christian music, and the radio, and then discovered Led Zeppelin, and then everything changed. as it does, you know.
Yeah.
John Bonham changed some things for me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But you already had your guys. You were saying you had your guys. You're on that path.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on that path. Like, didn't know how to get to from A to B, but was just eaten up with it, you know.
But there wasn't a time where you thought, like, well, maybe L.A. and I can go do the rock thing, or...
Yeah, I actually was thinking about New York and going to be a jazz drummer. That's where I...
Really?
That was my love in college, for sure. I really played jazz in college. It's like, I was a jazz snob, jazz nerd.
Oh, okay.
So I would go up to New York and take lessons with, like, John Riley and Matt Wilson and some of those guys, and I was thinking about... And I went to North Texas, one of their summer camps, and was going to go there. That was definitely on my radar. But I just, as I started to think about it more and more and started to really, like, kind of figure out what I wanted to do, being in Nashville and playing songs, not saying you can't do that in other places, obviously in New York, LA, whatever. But that just, it felt a little bit closer to home to me, a little bit more familiar. Just playing songs, you know, where there's a singer. And I just felt like I just knew I could do that well. So I was like, you know, I'll give that a shot and see what happens. If it doesn't work out, then we can figure something else out. But yeah, I was like, you know, the whole adage of like playing 10,000 notes for 10 people or 10 notes for 10,000 people.
Right.
It's like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that.
Yeah.
Not to say that the other thing isn't cool.
But is that still a thing that you kind of want to...
No, definitely not.
No. Okay. Not at all.
I left that, yeah, in the rear view.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when's the last time you played jazz?
I have no idea. I mean, it would be in between takes, just messing around in the studio.
Okay.
With other studio musicians, just for fun. But I haven't played, like, a jazz gig, dude, over a decade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I used to do that, like, every week. That was all I did.
Well, could that come up and you'd say, sure?
I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, I could go into a session and sight read a big band chart.
Oh, okay.
And everyone would be like, I didn't know you could do that. You know?
Right on.
It's just, you get, in Nashville, there's so many different pockets of players. There are some guys that just sight read on sessions every day. But then the majority of guys, if you put a sheet of music in front of them, they'd look at you like, I don't know what this is, but... If you want to make some music, just play me the song and I can figure it out.
Right.
And so that's the majority of what I do, is reading a number chart, Nashville number chart. Doesn't have any rhythmic notation or anything like that. It's all, we all read the same thing, you know, which is cool.
Yeah.
But
you just do your thing.
Yeah, you just interpret the song however you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And just really never, I mean, I'll listen to jazz records still, but I don't have that bug in me anymore to do that. There's so many guys that are great at that, you know.
No, I understand. I get it, man. And also, you're too busy. Too busy.
Yeah. I mean,
you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing... Let's jump ahead to, like, you work with a lot of different producers.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Like, what makes a good producer for you?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of things that make a producer great. First, well, communication is huge, I think. But even before that, whenever you're going to book a session or work with an artist, I think casting the right players is 80% of the work in the studio. Getting the right guys for the project, for the artist, be it their musical style or their personalities or whatever that may be. So the less that you have to say in the studio, the better. So there's all this unspoken communication that goes on whenever you're working with guys that you work with all the time. And you just know what the right thing is to do before somebody tells you what it is. So a great producer gets the right guys in the room. They communicate what they want to the players clearly and easily, you know? And you just, like, the producers I love working with play to your strengths rather than trying to get you to be somebody that you're not, you know? Otherwise, they should just get that other person, you know? So the producers that I love working with, what makes great producers, both of those kind of things, like, guys that can do that, and then when to know when the song is right, whenever we've got the vibe, we're on it, we're riding the wave, and you go, that's it, okay, we need to move on now, because we got that, we don't have to beat it, you know, into the ground, just to say we did, this feels good, and you go, okay, cool, awesome.
Mm-hmm. What when you say, like, can clearly communicate what it is they're looking for, what they want, if it's something that's real straight ahead and just kind of, I don't know how else to put it, just like real, like, just radio ready and all that.
Yeah.
What do you say? Like, what am I looking for? I'm looking to get on the radio. Like, what is that direction?
Right. And it's different for every song.
What are some examples of something that is really just, look, they're just trying to make a hit?
Yeah.
So what are we looking for?
That, in and of itself, is communicating that, right?
Are we just saying that? Is it like, guys...
You could just say, guys, we want this middle-of-the-road radio. We're not trying to make the white album here. We love the demo. We love that. Label loves it. A&R loves it. Let's make that, and we're just going to beef it up. And here's how we're going to beef it up. We want to add this extra... We're going to double these guitar parts. We're going to do this.
Okay.
Don't really like the fills here. The transitions could be cooler. Let's get something a little bit more exciting.
And that's about all you're getting. A little more exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't like these. Make them a little better.
Right.
That's the extent of the direction.
Yeah, my job
better,
is...
Better, more exciting. Okay, yeah. Transitions.
But that, to me, says so much. Like, I can take that and I go, I know exactly what you're talking about. Because that would tell me then, okay... What snare to use? We need a snare that's got some more crack to it,
okay.
A little bit more life, maybe not as muffled on the toms.
Okay.
I'll talk to the engineer and go, okay, maybe let's go a little bit roomier on the sounds here. Let's beef them up.
Right.
And, I mean, I'll just go off down that road. And every musician, after you hear the direction of whatever the producer wants or the artist, when we're listening to the song for the first time, you know, in the control room together, everybody leaves that and goes to their own stations, and they're in their own world, and they're formulating a plan of what to do. Nobody says anything to each other, usually. I mean, sometimes a guitar player will say whatever lick he's going to work on or whatever, and they communicate that way. But usually these guys just go in, create a tone, create a sound, pick the guitar, pick the bass, pick the acoustic. I'm changing snares. I'm doing whatever, changing cymbals. And everybody's, like, silently... doing their thing. And that's what I'm talking about with getting the right guys in the room or girls for the record. You don't have to tell those guys, okay, I want you to play a Strat and I want you to go through a Marshall and I want you to have a little bit of verb with a little bit of delay and blah, 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 blah. Nobody says any of that, usually. I mean, it's pretty rare that a guy would say that. So yeah, like if somebody said to me, we want this country radio, exciting, energetic fills that go a little bit with the vocal. I mean, they wouldn't even say all that stuff. I'm just making up
stuff.
That's
too much already.
That's too much.
That's too much.
Yeah. So I would...
Are they even going to really tell you, like, we want more crack in the snare? Probably not, right?
Nobody... I mean,
isn't it most likely going to be like, no, they don't even mention the groove. It's like, everything's fine, that we want the demo. Like you said, we just want more exciting transitions and the fills could be a little better and that's about it.
Or they just... They may want that, but they... haven't cognitively thought it and haven't said it,
and
know?
Is that's for you to decide normally? Yeah. Like, I'm gonna put more crack or more dry, more,
yeah, or I'll just go like, hey, how's this snare? A lot of time, I mean, I'll just ask, is how's the snare sitting,
and they're
in
like
mix?
That's good, right?
They're
that's
like,
good.
Oh, sounds great.
Yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
If it's not, then they would say, I don't know, it may the tone of it's kind of fighting a little bit with the guitar or whatever,
right.
Or it's not cutting through,
right.
So I start tweaking stuff and maybe change it out, and we get it to where it feels right for that song, and then we go.
And that's another interesting thing. And like you talk about cartage, and okay, so there's a session, and you're gonna say, I don't know, bring the Gretsch you showed me, you know, the,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But you don't know what the stuff is,
right?
So it's usually, like, in some ways, it's kind of backwards, right? It's like, it almost should be the other way, right? You know what you're going to do. I know what kit would be the right kit. No, you're saying it's just...
That's why I bring a lot of stuff.
There's the kit.
Yeah.
But one kit.
Usually two, sometimes three.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's there in case you need it.
Yeah, in case I need it. And I'll bring about 15 snares mm-hmm. that can cover pretty much whatever we would need.
What size kick drums are you going to have?
I'll usually have anywhere from a 22, 24, and then sometimes I'll bring a big, like, 28 concert bass drum. But I can get most of what I need out of a 22 and a 24 because they're so good, the drums that I have. They're really versatile. I can make a 22 sound like a 26 or 28 or vice versa, you know?
Yeah.
So, and honestly...
A 20 is just never necessary.
I don't...
You just don't like it.
I have 20s, and I used to try to use them on pop rock sounding kind of stuff. It just didn't feel right to my foot. 22s just feel right to me. I used a 24 as my main kit for a long time, but I just switched to a 22, and it just feels right to me. It feels right. But a lot of times I'll text the producer or ask them the day before, hey, what's the vibe? What are we going for? What kind of stuff? What should I bring? Because I've got so many different kits here that I would hate for them, you know, to when we get to the session to be like, yeah, we're going for this kind of throwback, like 60s thing. And I'm like, damn, I should have brought my 60s Ludwig kit.
Right.
Or whatever. You know, right. Even though we could get that vibe with whatever we got, it could have been a lot cooler with this, you know. So I almost always will, either I will know based on the artist that we're working with, what kind of sound that we're probably going for. Or I'll ask and say, hey, what's the vibe? What do we want to go for?
Mm-hmm.
Send me some of the songs and I'll just check it out. And I love that. I love like really like making things specific, building a sound for the song, for each song. And sometimes different sections of the songs will swap out a kit, you know, and
mm-hmm.
like you used to hear about people doing.
In one song, in the same song. Swap out, yeah.
Yeah, like this is our verse kit, and this is our chorus kit, or mm-hmm. whatever that may be. As a listener and a fan of music, I like that, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I like those records that people do that.
Well, I don't know, I mean, if you've been able to even play around to the extent of, I've talked about this before, I think, on the show, the idea, I remember reading once that, I think it was Alex Van Halen, like they would use Diplomats dips on the kicks, and it was like change them after each take. Now, you know what I mean? And I asked an engineer, like, would that even to you, does that make any fucking sense at all? And why? Why are we doing that? Why are we using dips? Why are we changing after every. Why are we doing this? Too much money? Too much.
Probably.
Who knows? Have you ever done anything like that where it gets a little... Just because you could. Just because you fucking could. And you were like, this is the time to try that shit, basically.
I'm sure I have. Yeah, not to that extent. Mm-hmm. Not to where like I'm taking that much time to like swap out heads per take. But I'll definitely...
Have you swapped out a head for just over a song? Like, have you done that? Or, nah,
What I'll have is like enough drums with... so many different sounds that I can go, you know what, this needs a calf head on this, on a night, like a 20s old kind of thing. I've got that here with me. Let me just bring that out. Mm-hmm. Rather than trying to make a snare sound like whatever I'm trying to go for, I've usually got whatever that sound is, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'll just throw that up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. In
a lot of it's usually with kits and toms. Like sometimes... I'll just go, hey, we need to change the kit out for this. This other kit would be perfect for this.
Right.
And usually we have enough time. Sometimes we don't have enough time, but we can do it pretty quickly, you know. And engineers are usually cool about that. Some guys get a little grumpy, but most guys don't, thankfully.
Yeah. Of course.
If it's worth it, then it's worth it, you know.
Right. Right, you'll fight for it if it's...
Yeah, if it's something that you really believe in.
Other times you're like, you just let it go.
Yeah, it's like, that's cool, we can... This works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when it's really a unique kind of thing, and it's like, no, this needs to be that. Let's change it up.
Yeah. No, I get that. That makes sense. All right, so do you have that one kit, though, that you feel like just the workhorse, this one gets...
Yeah, for sure. The 70s Gretsch kit that I just got a couple months ago from a guy here in town. Yeah, it's beautiful. It can do just about anything I want it to do. It's amazing. It can sound like an Al Jackson Jr. kit, like if I just detune the toms and muffle them. And then it could sound like Blink 182. It could sound like a Travis Barker kit, like super, like ringy tone for days, punchy toms, like loud, everything is punchy. Or if I tune it differently and play it differently, it could sound like it belong on a Robert Plant, Alison Krauss record. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. I just like got so lucky with this kit.
Have you messed around with newer Gretsch?
Yeah, I have, and I've got some. I've got a USA Custom and a Broadcaster kit, and I love them. I used to use a Broadcaster all the time. That was my main kit for years. And just, you know, how you just want to mix some things up every once in a while. I mean, I use that on hundreds of records, and it's great. And there's nothing wrong with it. I've still got it. I've got it at my studio now. And it records really well. They record really well. Gretsch is...
just different.
It's just different.
You hear it, it's clear, as day to you.
Oh, God,
like, the difference of, like, that 70s Gretsch versus your USA Custom.
It's night and day, for sure.
It's night and fucking day.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, and that's what keeps me inspired, so I want to... if I'm inspired about it, then I'm going to have a better performance. Yeah. You know, most people would go, I don't know, I don't hear the difference, blah, 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 whatever. But for me, it's night and day difference.
Night and day. I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's not even like, it's there, it's perceptible. No.
It'd be like, that's the color blue and that's the color red.
Wow.
Those are two different colors there.
Wow, man.
That's undeniable.
Wow, yeah.
And it's cool. So I've got these particular kits. I've got two of full kits and then a bunch of different kick drums from this particular era of Gretsch and Maker, of how he does the shells and cuts the edges and the hardware is
the one you were showing me.
Yeah, it's all everything on that kit is specific to a certain sound.
Is it rounded edges or is it
he slightly, does but he doesn't he just butters the edges. He doesn't really like it's not a sharp 45 degree or a 30 degree. It's just kind of somewhere in between.
Huh.
And all the hardware is really light. These are like secrets that I shouldn't be saying.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I got you. The light. Yep.
So sometimes and I didn't realize this, and also the wrap has a lot to do with it. So
are you not using die cast tubes as also?
Right. Yeah. So they're single flange. Yeah. That makes a huge difference. And the spurs on the kick drum, they're not the heavier spurs. They're lighter. The lugs are a little bit lighter. The wrap is super thin. That makes everything just open up like crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's about how you tune it and hit it. So, you know.
Of course, man.
All that stuff.
You put someone else on it and it's...
it can sound totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Is your go-to more of a detuned kind of thuddy, or do you like the ringy?
I like the ringy, man. I like, for me, I want to start with something, and I'm this way with snare drums, too. I want it to be able to be as open as possible, and then I can always dampen it down, but I can't do the reverse. You know, I can't undampen a dead drum.
Right.
And sometimes you just want that thing anyway, but I can make an open drum sound dead. In five seconds.
Sure.
So
sure.
I'll start with everything open.
Yeah.
We'll get sounds with everything open, because if you can EQ it and get the sounds sounding right like that. Now, granted, if I know the song needs it to be more dead and dry, like 70s kind of thing, then we'll go with that. But whenever you get drum sounds in the studio and you can get that open sound sounding incredible, it's so much easier to get a dead sound from that rather than the opposite.
Sure.
So a lot of times I'll start, especially with toms and snares, getting sounds way more open, a little bit of ring to it. And also in the track, I've learned whenever there's a lot of guitar parts and a lot of stacks and stuff, you don't hear the ring as much in a snare drum as you do when it's just the drums.
Right.
So, like,
it sits in the mix.
You don't really think about that, you know?
Right.
And with cymbals, too, like, cymbals are a little darker to a microphone than they are in the room, which I didn't really think about until, like, a couple years ago. Like, if I'm hitting a cymbal at a drum shop, to me, I would go a little darker just because it sounds more pleasing. But then in a track, it gets lost or can get lost, you know? So I'm like, so I've kind of veered to a little bit bright, not bright, bright, not like.
But it needs to be bright enough where it can.
Where it can cut through, yeah. And I'm not hitting super hard, so I like things to respond at, you know, lower volumes and things
like
that.
So you prefer thinner?
Yeah, thinner and kind of medium on the darkness side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah.
I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like naked to just the ear, you're like, no, I'd lean darker and heavier.
Yeah.
If we're just going to play.
Right.
I don't know.
If it's just me playing drums,
yeah,
which is.
Yeah.
That we don't record that way, right?
Right, you know, right, so right. Like, no, I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like, it's not going to be as pleasing. Do you do that thing with the hats as well? I mean, what size hats do you like?
I always play 15s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried the Jordan 17?
I have, and it's cool, but.
You don't find that just in the mix
feel
nice?
Feel right to me.
Feel.
It's okay. More of a feel thing.
Back to
it
like
does
a 20
really
versus
good.
A 22.
Yeah, feel. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, there's just. Actually, the 17s that he uses, I think, are a little bit. They may be a little bit heavier than what I would think I would try to go for. Again, like in the room, and I know he has a bunch of the different scenarios and variations of hi-hat kind of vibes, but they would be maybe a little bit crunchier than you would think so that they can cut, you know, a little bit more in the mix. They're not like paper thin.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But
I'm saying, yeah, you've tried it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Tried 18... Right. Crashes his hi-hats, uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. We get bored.
Yeah. But you find
and it looks cool.
Well, no, it's just a conversation
right.
piece, right?
It is, yeah, it is a conversation piece.
You found 15s is the...
So I'll bring 15s, multiple sets of 15s and 16s. It's usually,
okay. Like,
I just switched over to Zildjian, just signed with them, and they've been incredible. And their cymbals are so musical. I love them. And I can get everything I want... Out of them, you know, 15s and 16s, I'll go thin on the 16s and then medium, like with the 15s. Like I'll use the fat hats. Those are kind of my go-to right now. And sweet crashes and rides.
Right.
It's ridiculous. They sound so good.
Yeah.
I could just do pretty much everything with that starting out. And then I'll pick from 5 different bags of cymbals.
Right.
You know, to swap things out, but
right. Now hold on, just to veer off for a minute. You're doing this a lot. Do you have anything else going? Like, do you?
Yeah, I also write and produce.
You do?
So actually, like this morning, I was writing with an artist that I produce. Wrote a song this morning. Did the demo at my place. Played guitar and bass and drums and.
Oh, so you play all the other instruments?
Mm-hmm. Just good enough to like. Get a demo going. I'm not
going
to be hiring myself to play on a record.
I got you.
I mean?
Yeah.
So I
you can show the guys though.
Yeah, we can get the idea across. My first instrument was guitar, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
My dad
taught
me how to play guitar first.
Okay, and also I take it back when you were in the schooling thing. Probably you were.
Yeah, played piano.
Yeah.
Took jazz piano lessons and stuff. You know?
So you can read. Yeah, like you were saying, everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that helps me, at least, in the studio to communicate with everybody, every chair. I can kind of, not in an annoying way, obviously, because nobody would like that, but maybe it is annoying for some people, I don't know. They probably just tell me to shut up. But I know what the sound of, like, a Tele or a Strat or a 335 or a Gold Top with P90s in it. If I'm producing something, I know, okay, I know that sound, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know what that does through the difference between, like, a Marshall, you know, and an Fender, whatever. Anyway, so for me, I really enjoy writing and producing stuff. It's not, I don't do that all the time, but whenever I can, I love it. It's a totally different itch to scratch and a different creative outlet. There's nothing like when you finish writing a song with people and you're all like high-fiving each other in the room, like, we got it. This feels good. This sounds like something that would be on the radio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a totally different feeling than whenever I'm playing drums on somebody else's record, because that's their thing. You know,
sure.
Like that's their record,
yeah.
That's their song or whatever. And I'm supportive team player, I'm adding to that. But It'd be like babysitting someone's kids and then having your own kids. Way different. Your connection to that kid is it's totally different when it's your own kid, you know?
Of course, man. Of course. Yeah. No, it makes. By the way, has that happened for you as far as have you written songs that get on the radio?
Not on the radio, but I've had songs that have been placed in TV shows and in movies and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's nice. Pretty mailbox cool. money, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. It still shows up. Yeah.
So I'm saying it's nice, right?
I know. Yeah. It's cool.
It's like what a different level that is to be not just.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I enjoy it. And it just really comes out
of. Financially, I'm saying it's a really nice end to be on.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. The more streams of income that you have, the better it is, I guess, you know.
But that's just a better...
But for me, it was really just about I wanted to do it.
Well, it's the love. I understand that. I didn't mean... I know, you're not doing this just to...
Sure.
Like, you could do other things to make money. I get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's just how my career's always been. It's like, I really enjoy programming drums or, like, building loops and things like
oh,
that.
Oh, you do that as well?
Yeah, so I would bring that kind of thing to sessions, and then that sort of... made me a little bit different from other people, you know, but it didn't come out of me thinking, how can I make myself different? It was just, I just like this, you know?
Right, right, right.
Because you can tell when someone's trying to, like, fake a thing.
Yeah,
like
you're doing it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to do it anyway.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, I got you.
Yeah,
like,
I love
you're
that.
Like, I'm going to write anyway. Like,
yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to, if I just did the same thing every day, I would get a little bit, not necessarily bored with it, but I would feel like, there's a part of me creatively that's not getting out, you know?
And as a producer, is it something where you could see someone out? I don't know. I mean, we're making this up. I'm just as a question. Like, you see them out, and they play, and you see it, and you're like, I see it. I hear it.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
That's the kind, and you approach, and it, have you done
I
that?
I have before,
you've
actually,
done that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, is it that kind of producer? Like, you want to be...
That's not normally my vibe. That's not normally my style, but I have done that. There's an artist, My Red and Blue is his name. This is his artist name, and I saw him play at the Basement, and it was so out of character for me because I'm not usually that guy, but I just went up and was like, man, this is incredible. I love what you're doing. I'd love to like maybe get together and write sometime and see if we can come up with something cool. Who knows? I don't know. If not, whatever. We'll just hang. And ended up writing some songs together, producing one of his records, and it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
which
what
is rare, you know.
But it like did something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In that moment, that thing where you're like, ooh, I hear it. Yeah,
yes.
I hear it. The potential,
I would love
it's
to
there.
Work with that
yeah.
guy or girl, yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And a lot of times...
And you like that chair. You like that role.
I do. I really do.
Does that mean you're not drummer on that?
No, I still play drums on it.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know...
Could you see yourself doing that one day? Like being just the producer and bringing in...
Maybe, yeah, maybe so.
The Craig Kranft, bringing in Larry
right,
London.
Right, like, yeah.
Could you see that or...
I could if it was the right project, if I didn't feel like, you know, I was the right guy for the project. Honestly, where that would come in handy the most is just to be able to listen to the tracking session from the other side of the glass to have a different perspective, you know? So what I'll do a lot of times whenever I'm producing something and playing on it as well is I'll get some passes down to where we like it, and then I'll go into the control room and just listen. And then if I want to re-record something drum-wise, I'll just do it at my studio.
Oh, okay.
And,
okay.
It, you know, have more time to maybe, if I didn't have this certain kick drum, maybe I want to have this sound here or, like, mic it a certain way or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's a totally different thing. And there's so many great other musicians, guitar player-wise, just other bass, you know, keys. There are a lot of producers, actually, session musicians that produce. And so we're all kind of producing ourselves anyways. And I'm relying on those guys to come, you know, sometimes they'll have great ideas for this or that, and maybe we should do this or that. And we're all just figuring it out on the floor together. And if it's not right, then I'll steer it a different direction, but... It's pretty cool. I enjoy it.
Yeah,
totally different thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, but you listen, a lot of guys want nothing to do with it. You know that, right? Like a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I'll ask and they're like, no.
Nope. Right.
No interest.
Yeah.
In doing that.
I've just always been interested in it. I mean, I've been recording myself in my bedroom since I was a kid on like a little crappy Tascam 4-channel recorder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to play along to records and. Wondering why they don't sound as good as these incredible records.
Right.
Little did I know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But that taught me, like, mic placement and tuning and treating a room, even though I didn't really know that then either. But, you know, I just always gravitated to the process of recording and why something sounds good. What does it take to make something sound good? You know, I'd be nerding out on, you know, engineering videos when I was in college. And I minored in recording engineering as well.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
But didn't really stick around long enough to, like, get into the studios at the school.
Yeah.
I would record there as a drummer on other people's projects, but it was always something that I did just in my bedroom, kind of collect some gear, try to get it to sound good, and then over time, touring, make a little bit of money, buy some more gear, that whole thing, and just next thing you know, I've got my own studio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, well, like, we, again, back
to...
No,
it's different. Not everybody's like that, but...
No, you're a lot more well-rounded than the average drummer. Already with, say, the playing other instruments, the writing, knowing how to engineer.
Yeah.
Knowing how to, you know...
Right.
Like mic placements, produce, talk to people.
Right.
Like you said, communication. A lot of guys can't do that.
Sure, sure.
As you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man.
They can't really put it into words.
Right.
They just, I know it when I hear it, and I know, I just know what's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
But you could give direction.
100%.
Because back to that, of what makes a good producer, back to that question, is a lot of it just setting the vibe? You mentioned, like, picking the team. Is a lot of it just setting the vibe as well?
Getting the right guys or girls in the room.
Just putting the team together.
Putting the team together.
Yeah.
Having a... Because it's not even really about, like... I used to think producers had this grand vision for every song and knew what everybody should play every moment. And it was just this... I just didn't have that ability to, like, hear everything like a producer would, you know? And it's like, well, no, not everybody does that. There's so many people in the room that have so many great ideas. Your job is just to let them come up with those great ideas, see it through if it needs to happen, and okay, let's roll with that, or let's not. You know, you're really being a smart and diplomatic decision maker, I think, is important. For a producer to go, I love that, but it's not right for this song, or it's kind of fighting this thing. What if we tweak it and did this? And then you're giving the musician, like, some good positive feedback. They feel good about it, and it's becoming better than what it was, you know?
Yeah.
There's a like science to that that is really interesting, kind of like a psychological aspect of working together with people, especially with creative people, to where you don't want to stifle that, because then you lose what they could bring to the table.
And you don't want to be making them feel like you're telling them, and where they almost hand the sticks over, like, show me.
Yeah, yeah, where it gets weird. You
do
know.
It.
Yeah. And
why don't you do it?
Right.
You know, you just get that guy, right?
Yeah. It's like, well,
I have an idea.
Okay, I guess
yeah.
I will.
Yeah,
but.
I have an idea.
Sure, I will.
Right.
No,
well,
that would
actually, in all seriousness, have you seen guys lose their cool?
Yes, for sure, but it's pretty rare.
I would think so, but you've seen it.
Yeah.
And is it more usually sometimes you can go like, okay, something's going on. Like, there's more to this. Like,
yeah.
Something at home, something's going on with this
guy.
Right,
like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, maybe you just need to take a walk around the block or whatever. And a lot of times some guys can't check the ego at the door and go, this isn't my record. This is their record. Mm. And I'm here to support that, you know, whatever they need and want. I want them to be happy. It's a service industry at the end of the day, really. If you're a studio musician, you're there to serve the song, artist, producer, and if they're not digging it, then they're not going to call you back, you know? So if you want to keep working, you want people to enjoy working with you.
Right.
And some guys lose sight of that for... whatever reason it may be, and it's really easy to validate those feelings in your brain because you go, this is personal to me. I feel like if somebody's criticizing what I'm playing, then they're saying that I'm not a good musician or whatever that may be. And it's just not true. It's just not right for the song, you know?
Right.
So it's hard to do to separate your own, it really your ego, you know, in there going like, I'm amazed. This is badass. I worked on this. I practiced this. This is perfect for this. And someone going, ah, that ain't right. That ain't it. And however they may deliver that can set you off, you know?
Sure.
And you can kind of see it sometimes of guys like biting their tongue a little bit and going, okay, cool. Well, the guys that work all the time go, awesome. What about this? Check this out. Check out this idea. And you've got 10 or 15 great ideas that you could give them that could be cool. And they may go, yeah, that's great. I love it. And then you just move on. Right? It's like not a hill worth dying on, usually.
Right.
You know?
Right, right, right. It's the guys who work a little less, maybe, who get a little more attached.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How often, though, are you coming into a session and seeing a new face?
Very rarely. Yeah, it's pretty rare. I would say maybe like once every 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Whoa. Whoa.
That's honestly like really.
Wow.
Yeah, so you see that a lot of the same people. There's not a lot of people doing it. I mean, I don't know for sure, obviously, the number of people, but I see about the same 5 or 6 musicians per instrument, you know, on the regular.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more than that, but it's, you know, more guitar. There are more guitar players, you know, because a lot of times there are 2 guitar players on a session, or, you know, an electric player might play acoustic as well, but... But yeah, like bass players, keyboard players, the majority of electric players, it's like 5 to not even 10 deep that I would see on a regular basis. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is cool in a way, too, because then you get this thing, you get a good rhythm with people that you see all the time and you're friends with, you know, like these people were in my wedding or whatever, you know, really good friends that I see all the time. And... You know, you don't have to like tell them as much what to do. If I'm in that role, if I'm leading the session or producing or whatever, or I know what they would want too, you know, it's like, oh, we can do this thing because this guy's here. We can go with this vibe and he would crush that. What if we did that? You know, everybody's strengths and
not
as much strengths.
Sure,
I guess,
sure.
You know,
sure.
Which is awesome.
Do you have times, though, where you show up and you see the car in the parking lot and you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah, for sure. It's rare, though. That is rare, thankfully.
But it happens.
It does happen, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just have to go into it being like, hey, just be cognizant of that and don't let that come out because then it would be awkward or whatever.
Right.
But it's pretty rare.
But you have those thoughts every once in a while where you're like, I still can't figure out how this guy is here.
Sometimes, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
and they will remain nameless.
Oh,
obviously.
I know that. Yeah, You'll tell me later. No.
Exactly.
But like for real, like it's like they're working cats, and you're like, I don't understand it.
Yeah, and it's just personalities. Everybody is different. And
do you think a lot of it is that why they're working? Is it their personality over?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it would be. People, yeah, whatever they bring to the table, some people like that. And maybe it doesn't rub them the wrong way like it does rub some other people the wrong way. You know, everybody's different in that regard, so.
I don't like that fucking guy, but they seem to like this guy. Yeah. Just that thing?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I can't place it.
And it's usually not just me, you know what I mean? It's
other
usually
people are
like
saying,
a consensus of like, eh.
And yet there he is.
Yeah, but there that's rare. That's rare, and
but it happens.
Know,
it happens.
It does happen.
Yeah.
Just like any work environment, there's always, and I'm sure people that are listening to this are like, I hope that's not me. You know,
well,
if there are other non-drummers listening to this,
I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, that's just if the shoe fits.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Usually
I don't know.
You can tell.
Usually you can tell, and I mean, it's good to be a little self-aware. Like, I mean, we've talked about that, too. It's like, I know I'm a little difficult. I know I can be a pain in the ass, that kind of thing. If you know you're that person, and you're like, yeah. And then there's people we know, we don't have to name names, where you're like, they're such a great person.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like them.
Totally.
Bro, check yourself, man.
Yeah.
Because.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there would be something. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're those, yeah, I mean.
Like, they're just too sweet.
And usually people know when they're being really difficult, and
yeah.
They'll, like, I'm talking about, like, in small doses, where it's like, okay, I know I'm being a pain in the ass, but this is worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Or, what you get out of that person because they're such a great musician is worth putting up with whatever personality thing that may rub you the wrong way or whatever.
Well, I'm saying that's a certain level. There's a there is levels to this, I guess, where it's like,
yeah, there are.
Like, bro, it's Vinny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we just put up with it because it's fucking Vinny, and dude, you just
do whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just get out of the way.
Totally. Like, I mean, we all understand a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there stuff that, I mean, we talk about, like, well, first of all, what do you listen to? Let's go back for now. I'm talking today. Like,
yeah.
What are you listening to?
Podcasts.
Yeah.
No, I listen to music a lot. I listen to music. Honestly, what I've been digging lately is the Mammoth Wolfgang Van Halen record.
Interesting.
Love.
Interesting.
Love that stuff. So, interesting. I'll go through phases, you know, like, and tons of Foo Fighters. I mean, I've been just listening to Foo Fighters. A lot of, like, early 2000s rock, Third Eye Blind, like, all that kind of stuff. I love. I listen to that every day, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm, like, bringing that into country music, into sessions sonically and parts and everything, you know. I love it. Loving it. But, yeah, that and... Honestly, man, I'll listen to things for different reasons. Those are records that I listen to purely for enjoyment, but I'm always dissecting it and listening to the mix and listening to, you know, picking up some sort of engineering trick or like going on a deep dive on YouTube or whatever to see who engineered it and what they were using or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I can't not do that whenever I'm listening to something. It's just a part of me. But then... So there's a lot of what I listen to is just strictly like for inspiration to get new sounds and different things. There's a band called Plastic Picnic that I've been into a lot lately. It showed up on my Spotify. They're not even a huge band, you know, but it just sounds so cool. It's cool. Like, I'm big into pop synth stuff as well. So, like, it's just got a wall of synths in my studio and love coming up with sounds like that. So it would be like Mike Dean, you know, like hip hop producer. Anything that he does, I usually love. But there's all different reasons. I'll listen to different things for different reasons. Devoured the Rolling Stones. God, we'll have to edit this part. Rolling Stones guitar player.
Keith or Ronnie?
Keith. Yeah. His solo record that Steve Jordan did.
Oh, yeah, man.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
I probably listen to that record every day for a couple years. No joke.
Yeah.
And would play along to that record in my studio and, like, mute it, try to get the same drum sounds and blah, blah, blah. So, but then so I'm kind of obsessive about stuff like that. I'll listen to something literally every day for like a year or two and then just not listen to it anymore.
Right.
And then go on to the next thing. It's almost like I internalize it and just soak it into where it's a part of me and then I leave it and go on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird.
Do you want to do that kind of stuff? The one, you know, the stuff you're talking
about? I love that. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
So does that get to you where you're like, damn it, I'm here and I mean, you're in this world. You're doing great.
No, I mean, because... I never go, man, I wish I was doing this or that, because there may be a day where, like a couple days ago, I was playing on a record that was instrumental, like kind of jazz fusion-y, and I was trying to channel this like John Scofield kind of thing, but I didn't know we were going to be doing that kind of sound, but then I go, oh, okay, cool, I'm getting to do that, and then the next day... something drastically different, you know, maybe a country shuffle, or maybe we're going for like a 90s country vibe and do that, and then the next day it's like, oh, we have this song and it's kind of got a reggae thing, but we don't want it too reggae, we just want a little bit of it.
Yeah.
So it's really like every day I get to express a different kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, if it's not coming out, if it's not happening, I'll literally just go up in my studio and make tracks. During COVID, I was up in my studio almost every day making hip-hop tracks that nobody will ever listen to, but I just loved it. I got addicted to it and would make these like minute and a half long vignettes, really, of like just tons of different like hip-hop records, you know?
Yeah.
That I don't think have ever done anything, but I enjoyed it.
Right.
You know.
Again, I just be back to that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it no matter what.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do it. And it's all on a hard drive somewhere.
Right.
May not ever see the light of day, but it's all, I look at it as not wasted time either. It's all, it can translate to something in the studio or some sort of thing that could be financially beneficial at some point.
So do you, I mean, back to like, what else, I mean, you were saying like, well, yeah, I also write. I mean, you're just spending all your time doing music. I mean,
yeah, pretty much.
Is there anything else you do to get out of all that world?
Yeah, I'll play golf every once in a while.
Golf,
that's,
damn,
that's
bro.
It. That's damn. Literally it.
That's it?
Yeah. I'm not kidding. Yeah, I mean, and I love it. I'm happy with,
I don't
feel burnt out. If I feel burnt out, then I'll, it only takes me literally like a day to recharge, and then I'm good for like months.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm, thankfully, you know, but it's just because I'm doing what I love. I don't feel like, it's not, you know, the whole adage, like if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. I mean, that's kind of true, but I can just find something that I love, and even if the song's bad or if it's something that I don't dig, then I'll just try to find a new snare sound or do this or that or whatever. But yeah, really, it's like drums and golf, and that's pretty much it. I got way into golf.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. Around like 2015, 2016, I played golf with some friends of mine that I grew up with that grew up playing golf, and they were really good, and they just killed me, you know, like, and I look like an idiot up there, like, shanking everything. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm so competitive with myself that I'm like, I'm going to get good at golf now. So where I can go play with anybody and feel good about it. So I took like 25 lessons over the course of like maybe 2 months and just drilled it in.
Wow.
And got to where I was shooting in the 80s, like normally, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anything about golf, but I know that's not hard. Bad for 2 months.
It's like, hard. Yeah, yeah. It's really. Well, I mean, that didn't, you know, come. Only and bought like a simulator and turned a room in my house into like a golf simulator room.
Damn.
I know.
Yeah, man. Wow.
It got like way into
You do go deep though.
It's addictive.
We've established that. No. Yeah, but on everything, you do. You go down that rabbit hole.
Deep dive.
Yeah.
But I'm very selective with what that is. It's only really like two things in my life.
Well, how much energy is there?
Right. Know? I don't.
Like, yeah.
Thankfully, it's not that scattered. You know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not like, okay, now this week I want to do this, or next week I want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun, man. And yeah, dude, golf is so hard, and golf. I feel like golf is becoming cooler now in a way. DJ Khaled's playing golf, which is crazy.
Right.
And it's become a bit more. It's not like a rich guy's game as much as it used to be thought of.
No.
You know,
you can go to Walmart
and get a crappy set for like $80 or whatever and go out on a municipal course and just go bang out balls and go have some drinks or whatever and wear gym shorts and a t-shirt, and people aren't really going to say anything, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll write a song and then maybe go play some golf or do a session and go hit the driving range afterwards just to chill. I don't do that as much anymore because now I have a son and a family.
Oh, okay.
That
I was gonna say,
takes
like,
up a lot of time.
When's the last time you got to go play some golf? Is it
been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I've only played maybe like 3 or 4 times this year.
Okay.
So not that much.
Yeah.
Which most guys that play a lot would play like a couple times a week, you know?
Uh-huh.
But since I drilled it in so much, like so quickly and in a short amount of time, I could go 6 months without ever swinging a club and then come right back to it and we're good, you know.
Damn, man. And but there's no vacations for you?
Not a lot.
Is that a point of contention at home, whatever? Is that
not, I mean, well, dude, I used to, there was a period in my life where I didn't take a vacation for like 10 years when it was just me and I didn't have I wasn't married or whatever. I mean, it just work, and I loved it. It was great. I never felt like I wanted to take a break. But yeah, we'll usually do like 1 or 2 things a year where we set out some time and just take a week off. And ultimately, a couple days in, I'm getting antsy because the phone's ringing and I'm like, I'm out of town, not there, can't do it, sorry.
Right.
So you gotta, that's another thing, you know, you gotta shut that down, which is healthy. And I've learned that over the past couple of years.
To turn it off?
To basically? Turn it off, yeah, to like, when I'm not working, when I'm at home, like I would used to just work as much as I wanted to, as much as my body would allow. And now it's like when I'm home, I'm not going to be, and if my wife hears this, she's like, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lie.
But I'm trying to, right.
In my mind, I'm, all right.
Yeah, I'm shutting it off, but right. I'll just wake up early and go do it in the morning.
Right.
But yeah, man, it's been healthy to like take a break every once in a while, recharge, take care of your mental health. That's like something I never even really thought about at all, and has been a huge asset to just my everyday workflow life, taking care of that, you know? Because a lot of people, you know, in the music world, and especially in the recording community, which is really small, those guys and girls are just built different. You're really competitive with yourself. You're really, most of the time, maybe a type A personality, or you're really hard on yourself, or you're a perfectionist. And that is, you know, what makes you good at what you do. But then when that gets to a point to where it's unhealthy, then it can get bad. You know, it can get weird. And so not knowing that that was even a thing about me, I was like, okay, figured that out kind of the hard way. But thankfully I did.
Yeah. I guess that's...
that's a whole other thing.
Well, I mean, topic. But it's important.
I get it. Yeah. It is. Fuck yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Come on. I mean...
It's huge.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Dare I say?
Yeah.
But, you know, you figured it out, I guess, for now.
Yeah. Just balance, you know, and...
Whatever the hell that means.
Whatever that means. Whatever, and that's different for everybody. Everybody's got to figure out their own thing. Started meditating last year.
Oh, shit.
And it's been incredible. Huge.
Did you have to learn how to do that? Did you have to...
Yeah. I just use an app that's like guided meditation.
Yeah.
Because I used to think meditation was you just sit there in dead silence you just are there with your thoughts. And that sounds like horrific to me.
Yeah.
Because it would just be a train of thoughts of like, okay, now I'm just thinking about all the stuff that I need to go do or that I want to do or blah, blah, blah. I couldn't shut it down. But downloaded an app. Insight Timer is the app that I use. And it's free. It's great. And you just listen to, you type in whatever thing you want to work on or think about or whatever, and you just chill. Let the nervous system calm down a little bit, because mine was jacked up. And so I would, you know, be, you know, on too much. I was too high, on too high alert, basically.
Yeah.
So I had to learn how to calm that down. And man, it's helped a ton. Even like it personal life, obviously, but in the studio too, just... Not letting little things get to you as much, learning how to compartmentalize certain things, or like not getting worked up, not overthinking things, blah, you know, you name it, like any certain thing. Performance anxiety, like don't have that, or if I do, I know exactly how to work over that and be cool. Like last year, I played at Nissan Stadium for the first time ever. Never played at Nissan Stadium in the CMA Fest. Like 50,000 people and like millions of people watching on TV. And I'm sitting there going like, holy shit, this is insane. I don't want to drop my sticks. We're doing this all live, you know, like what if?
Right.
And you just have to go to that place of like, you go to, you know, whatever thing that you find that helps you to get to that place of just feeling free to being okay to make a mistake. Then you probably won't make a mistake, you know? And I'll even have that sometimes on sessions, you know, where I'm like the younger guy there, and all these guys are like dudes I grew up listening to. They're like bazillion Grammys and ACM awards. And I'm going like, why am I here? You know?
Right.
Why? Like, I shouldn't be here. Somebody must have been booked and I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, wait, no, they wanted you there. You know?
I think everyone has that, like, it's the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, totally.
Once it kicks in once in a while, like, they're gonna find out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't belong here.
Yeah, just like, at some point, they're all going to figure out I suck.
Right. Yeah.
And it's wild whenever people start talking about things like that, because you don't realize... Like, some of my idols think that way, too.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, not just... You're like, wait, really? No way.
It never quite goes away.
Never think in my wildest dreams that somebody else would, like, think like that. You just think, oh, that's just me and whatever, you know? But it's cool, man. It's really cool to talk about that stuff because it helps.
Do you pick the brains of the big guys?
Yeah, for sure. As much as, like...
You get to know them.
As much as I can. Yeah, and just become friends and...
Yeah.
And guys will, you know, you can ask most people like about whatever and they're open to share stories with you or whatever, because who doesn't like to like for someone to be into whatever they did, you know? It's kind of a like someone's a fan of you. Oh, that's nice. That's cool. I'll entertain this conversation. And you know, you pick up tidbits here and there, and you know, I mainly do that with, I don't do that as much with drummers. I do that with other players.
Okay.
You know, okay. Like bass players or who, you know, guitar yeah. players yeah. or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. Just thinking about it. That's because I feel like I don't really want, I kind of don't even want to know sometimes of like what another drummer was doing or did, because then I don't want to let that affect me or, and you know, like reinforce some sort of choice that I make that's not something that I would do just on my own, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting, because I would find myself, like in college in particular, I watched so many videos of Brian Blade playing drums that I started to look like him whenever I was right. playing, you right. know, like,
yeah.
And my drum instructor, and I would hit the cymbals how he would hit them, but it was weird. It wasn't right. You know, it wasn't yeah. me, and I wasn't good at doing it that way.
Right.
And so there was one moment there where my drum teacher, Tom Giampietro is his name. He teaches now at UMass and Amherst. He's like, okay, I'm banning you from watching any Brian Blade yeah. videos. Don't listen to it for like a
cutting
month.
You off.
Like,
yeah.
you're cut off. Yeah. This is too much, man.
Yeah.
And so, because, you know, my personality would be like to just soak all that in, and then I would, you know, was doing it too much.
Deep dive?
Yeah, deep dive.
Obsessive.
To where I was like yep, yep. looking like the drummer when I was playing.
25 guys, lessons in 2 months. I yeah. get it. I know. I get it.
So sometimes, for me, and it's not like a out of an insecurity thing where I don't want to know about certain drummer kind of things, which I, you know, I love that. It's more of just...
No, this makes sense to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it's
like
a writer... And they've read a lot, and they've worked on their craft, and then they're in the middle of a project writing. It's like they don't want to be reading other people's books during that.
Yeah,
that's understandable.
And it's really kind of like now
sounds the same to me, if you know what I mean.
So, yeah, because I used to think, oh well, if they did that on this, then maybe I should do that too right. because that was successful. And now I'm like, well, that's cool that they did that. I know what I would do in that scenario or in this thing or whatever. So I don't even really care that much, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that gives you a bit more of your own identity in a way.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Well, that reminds me, like, the thing I've been thinking about, too, is the idea of, because like, such a studio town, like, okay, like, Birch Drums, do you give a shit?
No.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
And that's...
But some guys do.
But that's interesting to me,
yeah.
because, you know, we all know that. Like, I'm saying, that's how they're sort of, you know, marketed, aren't they? Like, naturally EQ'd.
Yeah.
The mics just love them, naturally.
Dude, like, I honestly, and I'm not saying this to, like, try to sound,
yeah.
even if it would sound cool or not, or anything like that. I, like, up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I couldn't tell you what shell sounded like what. No idea. Mahogany, birch, maple, whatever it may be, no clue. Edges, cut, all that stuff. I just didn't know about it. And kind of, maybe I should have, but now I've literally only in the past couple of years I've been going, okay, I know this wood sounds like this or that or whatever. But that stuff I just don't really get into, you know.
Right.
Oddly enough, because you'd think I would, I guess, with my obsessive personality, but...
Yeah,
it's usually just maple shells for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I was curious because, again, just sort of being a recording kind of town and that whole thing, and it's like the recording customs, and we've got the damn,
yeah,
and we
yeah.
got the birch, and it's like nobody seems to give a shit.
Yeah, because like, you can make
such
any...
bullshit. I'm just calling bullshit.
It
because
kind
no
of
one
is.
Else will. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
It, you're not wrong about that, honestly. That, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, because it's yeah. like it's all business and you have to keep it going. This myth of like, no, that's, it's like, is it? Because we're here in a studio town.
Yeah.
And I can't find anyone who's...
Yeah, like, I mean, like you could birch. Hit a maple tom, birch tom...
Yeah.
Bubinga,
right.
whatever you want
right.
to call it, you know?
Right.
And...
The jojoba bottle.
Yeah,
Bubinga.
This
yeah,
is
yeah.
this was the bottom of Lake Superior, and
right.
it's like
right.
whatever.
Pine tar on this thing. I
yeah.
don't care. I don't...
It's a, I mean, does it... Are you playing? Does it sound cool?
Right.
Cool. Done.
Yeah.
Who cares? And a lot of times, man, some of the like most expensive stuff that's like really coveted, nice wood, I hear engineers say, man, they don't sound good.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know? Isn't that crazy? But it's all about how you tune it and how you play it. And I've always just taken that approach.
Starts with a C, ends with an O. Yeah.
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 You just play it, and it's, if it sounds good, it sounds good. You know?
Right, right, right. But again, but no engineer is going to see like a, you know, the Gretsch, the Ludwig, the usual suspects, the Rogers, and be like, oh no, they're just
right,
all,
right.
Everyone's like, oh,
yeah,
that's instant porn. You know,
it just sounds
everyone.
Good. There's
well, they
reason.
Just like they like seeing vintage drums.
Yeah, and I did too. And I used to only use vintage drums. Now I use a mixture of both. Again, I don't really have.
Yeah.
Heart. And some guys do. Like, I only want to play this because I know it sounds better or it is right. the best or whatever. Right. And I'm like, and my response to that thought process is great. That's great for you.
Yeah, you're actually, I got you.
It's not for, maybe that's not for everybody, but you can think that it is and that's fine. And you do your thing.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah. I don't care I as don't much care. About that. Yeah. And yeah. it's more about, how does this sound in the song?
Do you normally go like do you prefer a wood or metal snare? Does it matter?
I honestly
do you have go-tos?
I do. Yeah. I've got go-tos. I prefer metal snares usually as a starting place for a lot of the stuff that I'm recording. That's it sounds better to my ear to start with that. Like a six and usually a 6.5 by 14. Right now I'm playing shout out K-Watt snare drums. He makes an aluminum snare drum that's insane. It's so good. 6.5 by 14. That's been my go-to lately. That or a 6.5 by 14 chrome over steel. That's usually, I mean, I can honestly get, I can make that, a snare drum like that sound like 15 different snare drums mm-hmm. in like a day. I could use that on a ton of songs in a day and not ever have to change the snare and it wouldn't sound like the same snare, you know.
But if I said here's a Black Beauty 6.5, both 6.5,
sure.
If I give you here's a Black Beauty and a Superphonic, you can only take one for 1 month. Choose one.
I would probably go with the Black Beauty, just because that's what I'm used to a little bit more of. But that's not, you know, not.
But
one
but not a main go to for you either.
No, it used to be, but not
right.
anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The old classics are just like nah.
Yeah, yeah, they're cool, but they're honestly not great for everything. And there are some drums now that do sound better, and it is just to me at least. Granted, you know, we're
well. It was the time like when I started this, maybe I guess 11 years ago, 10 years ago. Guys were still like hyping about the Acrolytes, even you know, like Acro. Do you give a shit? I can see it now. Body language. No.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I've got a bunch of them.
Sure, yeah.
And they're great for
got
certain
them all.
Things. Yeah, I've got them.
You got the Black Rolex, right?
Yeah, you got it all.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah. And they're cool, and I, you know, they serve a purpose for sure. But it's not like, you know, I'm not going to spend $1,000 on something, you know, or whatever, even though they're not that expensive. But,
right.
You know, but I go through phases, you know, like I'll have drums that, I'm like, this is the best sounding snare I've ever heard in my life. And I'll use it on a ton of stuff. And, you know, you see a pattern here, I guess.
Absolutely.
But I won't get rid of it. And I'll hold on to it and I'll keep it. And then maybe something else shows up and go, okay, this is cool. This is giving me some new inspiration, new sound. Use that for a bit. And then maybe go back to the other thing and go, oh, wait, this one sounds better in this scenario for this sound than that one. Okay, cool. Now, and then over time, you just go, you collect things and you go, okay, I know what this can do and all of these different tuning ranges. I know what this snare can do with certain heads, strainers, blah, 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 tuning, muffling, this or that. And I know what that can do. I can make that do this or that. That doesn't do what this other snare drum does. This one really excels at this or that. And I'm all about utilitarian snares. Like, I could just bring 4 snares to a session and be fine, but 15 looks a lot cooler than 4.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. The big case, it looks cool.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I don't use them all that often.
No, I got you. Have there been opportunities that you, just scheduling, whatever, it couldn't pan out?
Yeah. To where I wouldn't be able to have all like, those.
Well, no, I just mean, no. I mean, I'm talking about like, first of all, when's the last time you took a tour?
Dude. probably 2012.
Would you at this point or no?
Yeah, for sure. For if it was the right, if it was the right situation.
But when's the last time you were asked?
A couple last year, actually. Yeah, I was like, and I'm not saying that out of like conceit or like I'm better than this or that. Not at all, because it just the timing didn't really work out, and on paper didn't make as much sense, you know, financially. Mm-hmm. So I just stayed in town. And
so it would have to make sense.
Yeah, it would have to make sense.
But you would do it.
I would love to, honestly, man. I would, because that's not something that I've really done, the big tour thing where you're playing sheds and you're playing, you know, stadiums or whatever. That's cool to do, and just it'd be fun to do.
Mm.
But it's not something that I'm seeking out, you know.
But it might just come your way.
If right? it did, cool.
The
if
right
not,
thing.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you would, okay.
Yeah, I would, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it was the right artist, you know, right music, right everything.
Yeah. I got you.
Hell yeah. That'd be awesome.
I got you. I mean, it's also nice to sleep in your own bed at night and all
that.
It
is.
Do you ever get flown out to L.A. or New York? Or
no, sometimes I'll get flown out to, like, Austin and do some records out there with some folks, but not really as much L.A. or New York.
Austin, did you do more country?
Some stuff, yeah, or, like, work with some bands. There's a couple producers that I work with there. But, man, people just send me stuff from all around the world, really, to do it in my studio, because it just sounds
right,
good.
Right,
you know?
Right, sure.
And so...
You don't have to go anywhere. It's
yeah, I mean, I know. Yeah, it's kind of a win-win for that. Although I'd love to do that, and it'd be great.
I could be doing this from home, I guess. I mean, I could be. I could, right?
You
could
yeah,
be home
I guess
right
technically,
now. Oh,
but
I could.
It's way cooler to be in person.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
We go the extra step.
Yeah. But yeah, that would be fun. That'd be a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah.
There's just so much work here to, I don't know, maybe.
But don't move here.
But don't move here, yeah.
Right,
there's
not
as much. Not
that much work.
There's more work in other places.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're not going to name them. But
I'm just kidding.
No, I know, yeah. I know. Just go there. Just,
yeah.
Don't come here.
Right.
No,
right.
I know. I get it, man. I get it.
No, I'm not that at all. Everybody come here. It makes it better. Nashville music scene's grown like crazy in the past 10 years to where it used to just be a country town,
you know.
Where, you know, I mean, people have been saying this for a while, but it's like you got the Black Keys here, you got Robert Plant, you got Sheryl Crow, you got, you know, Jack White, and you name it. I mean, tons of guys and girls of bands that are based in Nashville because it's so centrally located. You can tour so much easier out of here to the East Coast, Southeast, whatever, Midwest.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does. That's
yeah, Nashville's
true.
Grown, like, musically, culturally, quite a bit from what it used to be, which, now sometimes it doesn't seem like that, but...
Right.
But it has, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you're okay with it. You seem okay with it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Some people, you know, they're not okay. That's, you know, I know. What I mean. You know
yeah,
what I mean.
Totally,
yeah,
man.
Bitching and moaning, I know.
Yes.
It's
yes.
okay. I moved to Austin, Texas. I hear the same. It's the same song.
Totally.
It is.
Yeah, more
it's
people.
The very,
live
it's the very everything. Same song in both places that, like, if you talk to the old timers,
right.
A lot of them are like, man, you know, it's like, okay.
Used to be a different thing, which I totally get.
It's how
you
the
know?
World works, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I thought you were a progressive, you know, that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I thought
yeah.
you were, you know, you want to move. It's like, no.
To a certain point.
Turns out.
Till it bugs me.
Turns out they're conservative. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like they actually don't want things to, they want to go back.
They don't want things to
they
change.
They want to turn the clock back.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It is. Yeah, and I think you put it.
In other areas, they really want to go forward. Forward, forward, forward.
Right.
You know, and they're bitching about the people who want to keep the clock back.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Yeah, everybody has a strong opinion until it
yeah.
affects them, right?
Right, right. Until but it's good for the house value, though, always. Mm-hmm. That's the other interesting thing of those people. They always end with that. But my house value has tripled or whatever. Oh, no, so, man. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
Well.
That
well.
Is cool. I like the culture of the food has gotten better here. And I've only been here for like 16, 17 years or whatever that is. There are guys, you know, that... 80s, 90s, 70s, been working here since then that really know, you know, like downtown used to be like, you just didn't go downtown because it was, you might get killed, you know.
Right.
Like Wild West kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Now it's not that way. And now we're getting tons of great restaurants and like five-star cuisine kind of stuff here, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we're, it's a little, it's growing, like slowly getting some of that stuff. But
yeah, I heard there's still no 24-hour kind of food joint after late night.
Yeah, there's
low
there
on
used,
that. Or low
there
on
was,
that,
yeah.
Low
I
on
mean,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, Athens was awesome for that, which is great. It moved. Different place now.
Hey, you know.
It got expensive.
Apparently there's an opening. If you're listening and you're thinking about getting out of the music business and you want to maybe, you know...
24-hour diner kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Let's do it.
Exactly. I'm saying, right?
I know.
Right?
It would crush.
F-Golf. Just put your time. Let's go
yeah,
do that.
Yeah,
come on,
let's
man.
Go
let's
flip some
let's
pancakes.
Fucking A, bro. Let's go, man. Apparently there's a... There's
we
a,
would make a ton of money.
There's a big need for this.
Yeah.
Did something just happen or did I...
It sounded like, I think maybe the AC kicked on.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
And then you looked up. I was like, is the roof going to fall?
That moved, I think, up there.
Something moved. I know. That was interesting.
Yeah, there's a ghost.
The haunted...
It's the ghost of Larry London in here.
By the way, that's a great transition. I have a big question. Give me a Larry London story. I know you've heard Larry London stories.
Oh, well, I have a personal one, honestly.
You do?
Yeah, but not really... Not like... I've never met him or anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's before your time, right?
But when I was a kid, there was a music store, Sigler Music. There was one in Fortsmouth, Arkansas, and one in Fayetteville. And they were having some big sale one day up the one in Fayetteville, which was like 45 minutes north of where I was from. So me and my mom drove up, and we were just there, and they were like handing out free stuff and throwing out whatever. They threw out this like deep, I think it was a VHS. Of it was a Larry London tribute, the Sabian Day that they did, and there was like Chester Thompson played on it, Terry Bozzio, Will Calhoun, and it was all dedicated to Larry London. And I had no idea who Larry London was at the time.
Of course.
But the intro of it, I remember, was him pictures of or videos of him recording in the studio, and it just blew my mind. Granted, you know, I'm a kid from Fort Smith, Arkansas. There's not a recording scene going on there. So seeing that even on a video was like mind-blowing, and I watched it like every day, you know. So that's how I learned who Larry London was. It wasn't really from knowing that he was playing on a lot of the records that I would listen to or whatever. But a great Larry London story, which isn't, you know, I don't know, you probably have heard this one. How tight his tension was on his kick drum pedal.
Yes, everybody seems to love that.
That's a true thing.
No, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I'll show you in a minute and you'll say, okay, I understand.
Or you could like stand on it and not even like hit the bass drum. I mean, his legs were so powerful.
Yes, I mean, I've heard the one, and the guy sat in, and then it broke his foot.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Makes sense. And he had the really, really long bass drum. It was like 20 inches deep.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had that for a while, like kind of later on, I guess.
Interesting.
And just the tension on the kick drum pedal was so tight.
Yeah, yeah.
That the story is that, I can't remember who it is, or somebody was checking it out, and like an engineer, I guess, and went over to try to kick it because they thought, man, this kick drum sounds amazing, and couldn't even get the beater to the head.
Yeah.
They had to stand up and like put all of their weight on it to get it to get to the head. Just insane. I don't know how he did it.
I've never heard of anyone else who does that.
Yeah, me either. And there was there's another story which I'm gonna butcher. What did he say? There was a It was a session, and I don't know all the details of this, but the producer, it was whenever Larry had just moved here, because he moved from Detroit, I think, to Nashville, and he was kind of one of the first rock guys to do session work here in town, and he was working with a guy that was super-duper country, a producer that was super country, and the producer said, he was like, man, Larry, I love what you're doing there, but we need a little less of the... What did he say? He was like, we need a little less of the bra. Or something like that. You know, and he was like, what? A little less of the bra? The bra? And he was trying to say like brass, like cymbals, but he couldn't understand what he was saying. And it was some other word. I'm totally butchering that story. But it was some funny story about him like not understanding what the producer was saying. Because
the dialect was drastically
different.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, New Yorker in Texas, I get it.
Yeah.
Believe me, I know. Listen, man. I'm really glad we got to do this.
Oh, me too, man.
This has been great.
I know,
man.
We could go on for hours.
There's always part two. Don't worry about
that. Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
that's true.
We do that, you know.
And you come to Austin, Texas.
Got
to
do
apparently.
It. Yeah.
So
yeah.
So you never know.
Yeah. Love Austin.
We may have to do one from Austin, Texas, my man.
Torchy's Tacos. Fucking I guess they've franchised now, and it's a little different.
Yeah, it's
still the same.
I like Torchy's.
I do too.
Personally, this episode is brought to you by Torchy's Tacos
and Drum Paradise.
Exactly. All your cartage needs.
Cartage needs and tacos.
Exactly. Evan Hutchins, man.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, my brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.